try stop us, but they can't.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Interracial Drawing Podcast. I'm your host, at Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by Very White Guy.
And you are very white indeed.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We finally got to sit down and record this week, man. It's been crazy.
Fucking A, man.
I've been on a podcast, like, tear.
I know, and I did kind of complain, like, because you get to podcast with other folks, or you have... been doing your other, the FRN, you had another show, and so you got your podcast fix.
Yeah, this week was...
You got your fix. I didn't. Was definitely, I've been jonesing.
It. Yeah, I was on the single simulcast Wednesday, and then back to back, I was on the Pennyman Doctrine, and then recorded the Ferguson Response Network podcast Thursday night. So, yes, it's true. But here we are. If this is your first time joining us, you can find us online. Just search iTunes or Stitcher Radio for Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. Or you can go to our website, interracialjohn.com. And you can leave us a 5-star review on either iTunes or Stitcher. We really like them. And we'll read them on the air. Shout out to Rodimus Prime and say that again. Rod and Karen from the Black Guy Who Tips for that. And you can follow me on Twitter at Leslie Mack and my cohort at Very White a Guy. So let's get into it, man. Podcasting. What's going on, dude?
So I had an awesome week. And so, well, not all awesome. There's been, you know, like a timeline shit show we can talk about a little bit later. But I reconnected with Anna Smith, man.
It's so funny.
From literally like 20 some odd years ago, 25 years ago.
He have the Ennis Donuts.
I haven't told him or anybody about that yet.
Oh, do you want me to stop?
No, you can't. I'm just laughing. I haven't referenced that because it was a beautiful and lovely connection and a story. I was going
to
be like,
I say that only to mean that you talk about him all the time. Not because of that specific story. I just mean that his...
Fondness of,
yeah,
at
your
that
fondness
time,
for
powdered
him
donuts.
And no, your fondness for him and his effect on you. I mean, I didn't even meet you till a lot, you know, well after you stopped being in touch with him, and you talk about him all the time. So,
well, so I know you knew all the stories. Right. I had referenced multiple parts of it, but I'll give like the backstory. So I grew up in a very white town, like 0.25%. people of color, right?
Hence the very white guy part.
Hence the very white guy. Very, you know, one of the wealthiest zip codes in the entire country, like super privileged. Like,
I think it's the third wealthiest.
No, it's 12. But anyway.
Well, yeah, when you were there, it was third.
It's ridiculous nonetheless. So yeah. I straight up did not know and go around, grew up near black people. Although I did have my mom's best friend had 3 biracial daughters, and I knew them, but that was, you know, they were like cousins and family. Like, we went on vacation and stuff. And this sounds weird, but like, on some level, knowing them didn't necessarily mean that I knew black people in a more traditional sense. I still didn't like have a frame of reference or perspective
right.
that included like, you know, a traditional, you know, black, just black people in general.
Right.
You know, these 3 individuals that were like family members was it for a long time.
Right.
So,
and as I says to you, they're biracial. So
correct, and grew up in the same town and neighborhood.
No, you know, I say that to mean that they identified themselves as biracial.
Correct.
Not, you know, not a judgment. Just that.
No. There's no colors. I'm just. Right. I'm agreeing with you. They identify as biracial. Anyway. I go to college, Western Michigan, and I'm, you know, surrounded by black people for pretty much the first time. I wouldn't say surrounded by, but there are black people there present in the dorm. And in the way our dorms worked, you had 2 rooms that shared a bathroom, and you'd call that a suite. So you had a suite that included 4 dudes that shared a bathroom, but then 2 of you had your own room, and you could, like, lock it from the other side so that, like, you know, I couldn't go into my, you know what I'm saying? Like, anyway. So my suite mate at the time, my freshman year, was a guy named Ennis. And so people had asked. I did this Ask FM, right? Ask a Very White Guy. And there's oftentimes people will ask, you know, how have you gotten to where you're at? What's the frame of reference that you developed? And, you know, what was that? You know, what did it? What event? Sort of thinking that there's like a magic, just like, oh, you can do this one thing and then people are going to think like you do and they're going to be changed and different. And it, for me, it really hasn't been like that. It's been an evolution, and I have always described it as an evolution over time. You know, it's like a lifetime of like fucking up and trying to do better, right?
Right.
And so someone asked us, you know, what was the one thing? And I gave a very long answer about, you know, growing up in this place, and that I went to this, had a class and included Peggy McIntosh's Backpack of Privilege. And, you know, we did this take a step forward for all these different privileges. And at the end of the taking a step, I was like, you know, yards in front of anybody else, right? You had all the privilege, class, you know, white skin, male, hetero, like you name it. I had like, I have it all. That's why I'm, you know, a very white guy. So I'd been talking about that in the first time someone asked me about this. And then maybe like 2 or 3 weeks later, another friend, shout out Anastasia, thank you, asked a similar question. And it was more like, do you remember first moment of clarity regarding race and privilege? And mm-hmm. I, again, referenced that Peggy McIntosh class, but I took it a little bit further. I said, you know, I remember very specifically because right afterwards, my mind is sort of like, you know, for the first time open and thinking and I'm questioning. I went to one of my sweet mates, Ennis, the closest, but the black person I was most comfortable with and closest to in the dormitory, because we're friends, we knew each other. And I mean, you live like, you share a bathroom with a guy, it's not like,
sure,
right? You got, there's a level,
I mean,
of closeness.
He's in your life,
he's
in a real way.
In
yeah,
a very real specific way. Exactly.
Not casual.
Exactly. Yeah. So I, you know, and I don't advocate this. In fact, I see it as a, you know, a microaggression of sorts, but I did what a lot of white people did. I kind of peppered him with questions and like, basically, I didn't say it like this, but I put him on the spot. It's like, you know, answer for all of black people. What do you think about this? This I wanted education, and he was very generous and kind in giving it. I always kind of remember really like it affected me deeply. Like he and there was another individual, Al, that was there at the same time, Ennis and Al. They were, you know, polite and they responded and they took the time. And I asked like straight up, like, why is there a Miss Black America? Because at the time there was a Miss Black America. And I, you know, I questioned that. I didn't understand that. I would think like some people like, well, that's reverse racism. I didn't think quite like that, but I was questioning it. I didn't understand.
The necessity.
Yeah. The history of oppression that right. would necessitate needing a Miss Black America. And I remember asking about at the time, symbols of Africa, you know,
yeah, like Ankhs and
yeah, or even yeah. just the
Africa,
the African continent
yeah,
as a
medallion,
exactly,
like
with the different colors
was
very popular.
90s,
absolutely,
yes.
absolutely. So I asked about that, and I again was straight up like, you know, what would it feel like to you if I wore an Irish one, you know, and walked around with like a, you know, country of Ireland and this and that. Like, and not in like an insulting and aggressive way, like I think people sometimes do now, like, you know, ah, like I'm being devil's advocate, like a dick. I was trying to understand. And their answers were, I mean, you said it. They profoundly changed me, right? Gave me an understanding, and I valued that. And so I wrote this about on the Ask FM, and I said, boy, I really, you know, don't do this. But I, you know, asked him all these questions, and I kind of put him on the spot. It was inappropriate, and, you know, all the dumb shit that white people do. But he listened. He obliged my ignorance, and he really educated me. And I can remember that day like it was yesterday. And you're here saying that I've referenced it multiple times. Mm-hmm. So I wrote, you know, I wish I could connect again someday. I'd thank him and apologize for my ignorance. Mm. And I thought, you know what, the heck? Let me just, you know, Google. It's like pretty easy and powerful.
And also, his name is not exactly like.
Yeah,
it's unique.
And this is a somewhat unique name.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's not like John.
And I had the
location
and the right years, and
right.
so I, you know, had a bunch of data points, and I found a Twitter because Twitter is, you know, easy to do, right? Popular. It's it indexes high, and I was like, this looks a lot like him. I'm pretty sure this is him. So I pinged him on Twitter and said, "Is this Dennis that, you know, went to Western, lived in Garneau, next to Andy?" Because back then I went by Andy, and he's like, "Yeah, oh my God, it's, you know, can't believe it's you. It's so nice to meet you again." And so we had a couple of little Twitter exchanges, and I don't think it was like 2 hours, 3 hours later. So he's a writer. He writes, actually, I'd say he's an artist. He creates, he does more than just write. He's got music. He's got an album. I'll include the link to this blog post that he wrote, Ennis Smith, at WordPress. But so it might have been 2 hours later. He wrote a pretty, you know, long little piece about our interaction. And he's a devout man of faith, and about God specifically. And it was so touching. I'm not trying to like not be like, you know, patriarchal conditioning, but I kind of cried. It was unbelievable. I couldn't believe he just, that I reached out and that he absolutely remembered it and remembered that day as well. And then took the time to write this piece about it. It was incredible. It was absolutely one of the most touching and moving experiences I've had in a long time with someone that's not you or family member, and facilitated through, you know, someone I know only through Twitter asking a question on a platform, and then again through like social media. It was really cool.
Yeah, he says, I'm just going to read one piece from it. He
says, I don't want to be like humble brag, but thank
you. It's not humble brag. I just want to read this one piece.
Okay,
of it.
Okay.
He starts out putting in context just kind of memories and good memories, bad memories, and how you people come in and out of your life. And he says, when he was a freshman in college at Western Michigan, I developed some pretty awesome relationships with friends of different backgrounds. In fact, some of those relationships still remain today. Bunch of people that he's still in contact with, a band of brothers. And then there was my crazy, naive, and genuinely good-hearted sweet mate, Andy.
That's still apt.
That is true. He says, Andy was hilarious. He was the kind of white guy who obviously came from a town where black folks were either absent or shunned. But Andy didn't allow fear of the unknown to stunt his growth. No, sir. This guy used his natural curiosity to befriend us and learn about our culture. I can remember our talks as if they happened yesterday. So I just wanted to share that little part because I think it illustrates, one, what I say all the time, which is that black people know when questions are coming in a genuine way about something that other people may not know about, and when they're just concern trolling. So, yeah.
Well, and like, you know, when you say genuine, I actually like asked for his time. Can we
you
please
did.
Talk
yeah,
about
this? Yeah, because you really did
want
to know. You were honestly wanting
to. Yeah, sure.
To
and it was face-to-face.
Yeah.
Big difference.
Of course.
All right.
So the other things we did, you're supposed to ask me back, what about me?
Oh.
We're just going to talk about you and your shit today? Is that what's going on in this show?
Hold on.
Hold it. Hold it. Time out.
Time reset. Hey, babe.
Yeah.
What do you got to say? Because we did some other stuff this week, right?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we went to see the incomparable Betty LeVac. Actually, we had 2 weeks of amazing music. We saw local awesomeness, Kindred, the Family, Soul. Shout out to them, especially Asia. What's up, girl? Last week at World Cafe Live, and then this week we saw the unbelievable Betty LeVac again. I think this is our third time seeing her. It's ridiculous.
And I know we're going to talk about Betty. We didn't talk about the Kindred show, but woo, my God, did they fucking throw down?
Man.
I'm just playing. That was a
some baby making music.
Entertainment.
Oh, yes.
To the max. That was a
That was a show. Put it on.
I really was impressed.
It was awesome.
I loved it.
I've been waiting for them to have. They have not been playing locally for a while. The last show that they played here, we were out of town, and they've been playing down in Wilmington. I was going to drive down there. I was so excited when I saw they were playing here in Philly. So, and Asia is just awesome as a person.
What's the classification of the genre? Is it Philly soul?
Yeah, Philadelphia Neo Soul, I would call them, yeah.
Man, I love that sound.
Yeah, you do. You're big on that.
I do. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's talk about Betty.
Yeah, so we went to see Betty again. First of all, the last two times we went to see her, it was a decidedly black audience.
Yeah, you're right about this.
This time, it was like white people. To the point that Betty LeVac herself said, what kind of white people are you?
Now, and it's funny you say that, because it was like every other show we've seen, this is our third, right?
Yeah.
She breaks that wall, talks to the audience in a very personal way all the time. But the other shows were like, oh, I've been doing this. I've been working so hard. Thank you so much. This show was like, y'all in Philadelphia ain't shit. Yeah. I've been here for 30 years. Like
she was a little more combative.
I love it. Maybe because it was a whiter audience.
Maybe.
That's who she's chiding. Like,
I guess.
Motherfuckers, buy my album.
Buy my album. How about that?
I'm up here singing, goddammit.
She was so good. And if you haven't heard of her, please look her up. I'm going to put some links on the show notes about her. But she mentioned that the person who wrote What Condition My Condition Was In.
Some of you know that from the Lebowski movie.
Correct. She spoke with his son because one of his other songs is on her new album. And she was talking, she actually did the entire new album, which was really awesome to hear. And so she talked about the songwriters and how she came to, you know, get the songs. And the songwriter's son said that his father's favorite version of What Condition My Condition Was In was hers.
Yeah.
So, and I hadn't heard it before.
He's the guy that wrote the song.
Correct.
So he was speaking to people and giving them permission. And she's, as a song performer, she likes to talk to the writer.
Yeah.
And she couldn't because it was posthumous, but said it was his favorite. That's incredible.
Yeah, and the thing about her too is she's not a songwriter.
No,
but she's an interpreter of song, like to the nth degree. every time she does Beatles songs, she did a Rolling Stones cover on the album.
A Mick Jagger song.
It doesn't sound anything like you would expect. I mean, she just is one of those people that's able to embody a song in such a specific way. She does produce her own songs, so I think that's probably part of it.
Yeah.
She does, but I'm saying she produces her album with other people, but she is a producer.
You know, I think too, her career, and she's Grammy nominated or winning?
Winning.
Grammy winning. Her career spanned, you know, 4 decades now.
Yeah.
And you can see, and I don't know any other people I've known and seen so much, and then also seen the earlier work.
Right.
But you can really see over time how she's changed her tack and approach to music to age with her instrument.
Yeah.
You know, and when I say age, I don't mean that in a negative
way.
You know, it's like a fine wine, you know,
it
to mature.
It is like a fine wine. In fact, let's do that. I'm going to play a little bit of What Condition My Condition
is
In.
Okay, because that's older.
Yeah, that's much older when she recorded it. And then I'm going to play a little piece of her singing Rain Over Me at the Kennedy Center.
What year is the condition is in?
60s? Question. Yeah, I think it is like the 60s.
So this would be her,
quite a while
her
ago.
In her 30s.
Yeah.
And she, by the way, she looked friggin', I hope I looked that good at 50.
I wish I had her body right now.
Woke up this morning with the sun down shining in. Found my mind in a brown paper bag. Tripped on a cloud, fell 8 miles high. Told my mind on a jagged sky. Hey, I dropped in, see you a condition. My condition was in. Pushed my soul in a deep drop hole, and then I followed in. Watched myself falling out as I was crawling in. I got up so tired.
All right, so she sound good. Okay, and then when the Who was inducted into the Kennedy Center Honors, you know, the honorees get to decide who
fets
them. And Roger Daltrey specifically said, we'd like someone to sing Love Rain over me, but it has to be Betty LaVette. So he personally asked for her. And so this is a much better, I think. This was in 2009, so you can hear her voice as it sounds today. I think
matured.
Really well here. And I'm just playing the very climax of the song here. So.
So, goosebumps, man.
They were like crying.
Goosebumps.
You know?
That was
amazing.
Insane.
She's sick.
And when you say that we see her, the venue here, World Cafe Live,
it's tiny.
It's like 200 people.
Yeah, it's
you
very
know?
Small.
It's not
small
even.
Small venue.
You're up close and personal.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
That was awesome.
For sure.
You know, I don't know if you had it queued up, but so when we saw her 2 times ago, she did the song about Detroit. Is it? What old town? This old town?
Dirty old town.
Dirty old town. Mm-hmm. And so you're talking about her as an artist and a musician and what she's doing, like, you know, producing the song. She went into the record label with that song.
Right.
And they're like, no, we don't like that. We want more like, you know, you got to do it like this. And they kind of forced her to do like an upbeat sort of pop version almost of this song that in her mind she said she wrote or she had it envisioned as a funeral dirge
yes.
for the city of Detroit, her hometown. And they allowed her, I guess she, by force of her presence in the, so they did the two songs, but the one, the Funeral Dirge one's just like, are you kidding me? She slays it.
And she played them both in that concert.
Yeah.
That album had just come out, Thankful and Thoughtful. I'm going to just play the beginning of each of them so you can kind of get the difference and the, you know, the approach. So this is the record label's version.
I met my love down by Northern High.
God, I could listen to her all day.
Dreamed a dream at a gravestone dance. I used my love by the Dodge main gate. Dirty old town. Dirty old town.
Okay, so that,
That's the upbeat version.
Right, that's you can see it's got a groove.
Yeah,
you almost
can
dance to it. Okay, so now we'll play the version of how she wrote it.
And she called it a funeral dirge.
She did. She wrote it as a funeral dirge. So it's the same song, so same lyrics, and actually the same melody, but a different arrangement.
Tempo. So yeah. Here we go.
I remember that drum live.
Sounds like a march, yeah.
My love down by Northern High. Dreamed a dream at a gravestone dance. I kissed my love by the Dodge main gate.
Awesome.
That was 3 times ago when she did those, not 2 times ago. And she absolutely, and she ended the set with that song and started the set with the other version, right? So she bookended her entire set with those two versions.
Yep.
And then she left the stage, came back a cappella. And when I say fucking slayed it, like proverbially and literally set the mic down on the ground barefoot, took her heels off, right? Took her heels off because the show's over for the encore. Comes out, single spotlight, just her, you know, she's singing, puts the mic down, and then just in the room, no accompaniment, no amplification, just a cappella, fucking killed it. It was just like, are you kidding me?
She actually, when she came out for the encore, the band was still there. They played one song together.
Right.
And then she dismissed them.
Right.
And I was like, what's going on here?
Right.
And then she just took the mic and sang her heart out a cappella. After singing for an hour and a half, mind you.
Yeah.
And then dropped the mic on the ground and left the stage. We went fucking nuts.
I've never seen anything like it. I would say that concert, like, and you know, I've been to thousands of concerts, maybe thousands, maybe high, but probably close to 1,000 in my lifetime, right? We've been to a lot of concerts. That's, music's a big part of our lives and has been for me for a long, long time. But of the hundreds of concerts I've been to, and we've been to some doozies, right? Yep. Some really amazing
like, you know, shows.
Huge things.
Yep.
And I'd still put her definitely top three, like maybe even top two.
Yeah, she's up there.
It was unbelievable.
She's for sure up there.
Yeah, it was good. All right, so let's talk about the news.
The news is coming on. The news is coming on.
Oh, Texas. Did you hear about the white power signs at the high school game in Texas?
Yeah, I heard about it.
Let me play the newsreel.
Oh, it's There's outrage tonight in Plano from parents and student athletes. They say fans of a rival team first crossed the line during the game, then left a disgusting surprise for the athletes. Channel 8's Collin County reporter Jobin Panicker tonight live with that story. Jobin?
Well, that sign was up for 30 seconds. Teachers rushed to bring it down, but it was enough time to take a picture, tweet that picture, retweet it, and then the beginning of the fallout.
Now here on the campus of Flowermound High School.
The game had enough drama on its own.
All depends on this one. Everyone's going crazy.
Three overtimes, Flowermound versus Plano East. But what made social media circles over the weekend happened beyond the court. This tweeted out picture of Flowermound's student section, White Power.
Like, what does that have to do with the team?
An athlete with Plano East under a cover of secrecy.
We thought it was racist. They said White Power. So we were just like shocked.
This Plano East parent also saw it on social media.
Just so sad that the kids have to take it to that level.
Witnesses say it happened late in the game. Both student sections were hyped.
It looks like a little bit of razzing between the two student sections.
We know now the sign had a lot to do with it.
Our student section started pointing at the signs. So I think that's when it clicked into his mind, whoa, what are these guys doing? Teachers came and took all the signs down.
This athlete says it was up for 30 seconds, but there was also talk of Flower Mound students defecating and urinating on Plano's bus. Neither district could confirm this, but enough students have.
I mean, to me, that's criminal. It's criminal and it's just sick.
Flower Mound's coach had responded on Twitter to the sign, writing, "Unacceptable. As head coach at FMHS, I offer our full voice apology. I will pursue this fully. No place for this." Louisville ISD responded to our inquiry saying, while it's an unfortunate occurrence, the district is investigating this and it will be handled internally.
Connor Green!
Unfortunate occurrence.
So
an unfortunate occurrence.
Internally, just
is that what white supremacy and overt racism and putting up white power, that's just an unfortunate occurrence? The fuck?
Well, one, I guess, good thing that came out. There's a sportscaster named Dale Hansen in Texas who decided to make his comments known, a white gentleman, as you'll hear, a little bit more about his story and his personal thoughts on the incident and the aftermath, which I think was really what he wanted to address. So.
And it wasn't even just like, it was the same shit you see all the time. Parents were saying they didn't mean it that way. There was a bunch of signs that just grabbed them.
Dale's going to tell us all about it. So let's let him. I think he handled it quite well. So we'll let him handle it.
Football game in Flowermound a week or so ago with Plano East has changed some of the rules now, but it hasn't changed nearly enough. Kids on the Flowermound side were seen holding up signs saying white power. And too many parents and apparently others who care tried to defend what you cannot defend. Some parents actually argued that it was just a mistake. They had five signs, grabbed two, and they just accidentally, when held together, said white power. Louisville school officials say now it was no accident. And how could it have possibly been?
Exactly.
They're taking their signs away, but there's a history in Flower Mound. When my granddaughter, who went to Louisville High, would be at a game in Flower Mound, she and her friends would hear the chant, "Welfare babies, do you know who your daddy is? Because we know ours." I feel sorry for people who find their value in the value of their home or the money they have, but I don't blame the kids as much as some of you might. Maybe because I used to be one of those kids. I was raised in a small Iowa farm town that had only one black family in the county and raised by a man who used the N-word like it was a proper noun. I think I was 12 before I realized that the N-word actually wasn't the first name of Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Elston Howard, and so many more. My dad always referred to the black athlete and any person of color he didn't know that way, but he loved the Matthews family. Henry and Billy Matthews were good people. The whole family was. My dad always said they were different. The one black family he knew were good people. All the others he didn't know, they were the bad people. The ignorance in that reasoning, if you think about it long enough, will twist your mind, and it twisted mine. Kids have to be taught to hate, and it's our parents and grandparents and our teachers and coaches, too, who teach us to hate. Kids become the product of that environment. I was, and they are. The kids who hold the signs and chant their racist slurs, and it's not all of them, it never is, but their ignorance perpetuates the stereotype of all of us in Texas as a racist, ignorant people. But that ignorance will be replaced someday by the wisdom they learn when they live in the real world, when they meet the people who don't look like them, didn't grow up the way they did, the people who make this life worth living, they will change. Not all of them, it never is, but they will change. I did a long time ago, they can too. But not if we try to defend what you cannot defend. And not if we stay silent and think taking their signs away is doing enough. The world will not be destroyed by those who do evil, but by those who watch them without doing anything. Albert Einstein.
Preach, Dale. Preach.
All right, Dale.
Not all Texans.
Not all Texans.
Nicely done.
Good job, Dale. Anyways, so that was his response. I thought, I actually don't even need to say anything else.
No, that was good.
Literally said it all. So Loretta Lynch is one step closer to being confirmed as our first
one fucking like long ass fucking step
as our first female African American attorney general. She has been in the process 110 days longer than any other attorney general nominee in recent history. But she has made it through the Senate Judiciary Committee, and the full Senate should be confirming her in the next week or two. It was a vote of 12-8, by the way. And I'm trying to see Orrin Hatch, Lindsey Graham, and Jeff Flake were the Republicans that joined the 9 Democrats to approve the nomination. And Hatch said, quote, "I support advancing Loretta Lynch's nomination to the floor today because her record of service over several decades shows that she is well qualified to be attorney general. There's good reason to believe that Ms. Lynch will be more independent than the current attorney general and make strides toward recommitting the department to the rule of law." And Hatch said, this is the best, that Lynch's record, quote, "does not include anything sufficient to overcome the presumption in favor of confirmation," meaning I tried my best, but I couldn't find anything to say no to. So,
I really worked really hard.
I tried my best, y'all.
Damn it.
So anyways, I expect her to be confirmed. It's
absolutely
just irritating as shit that like it's just irritating.
It's
like
crazy.
Honest to goodness,
it really
it's just
is.
Irritating.
And I know people, I was just gonna say crazy people. It's ableist, whatever. It's the oddest thing. It's just, it's so hypocritical. It's so obvious.
And we're not even talking about this today, but this entire shit show that is the GOP Congress, it's the end of February. We're 2 months into this bullshit, not even less than 2 months. And already it's just the most ridiculous thing. And the fact that they don't see how bad it's making them look, it's like you are just showing how inept you are at running anything.
And not even like there's the inept at running things, but like, honestly, like their number two dude, like spoke at a Klan rally and it was like, meh, like really like, oops.
Honestly, I don't even care about that shit. Like we have a government that needs to be run. Like, I'm sorry, but they're talking about shutting down Homeland Security. How are you the most alarmist ass people to talk about all these people trying to get us and we're going to be in talks with this and doing all of that? And then you're like, yeah, we're going to hold Homeland Security's budget hostage. The fuck is that? Anyways, we digress.
Yes,
let's talk about some other racists.
Some other more racist bullshit. We didn't talk about the Oscars. We didn't talk about the Oscars.
Yeah, we didn't get. Yeah, we haven't. This is the first show since the Oscars came on, and of course, there's been nothing but a week of ridiculous fallout from it. You know, Oscars So White was trending, and we didn't watch the show. Which is unusual for us. We have in previous years watched. We did not watch at all. I don't know what we were watching. Other stuff. We watched The Walking Dead, whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, we're on Twitter seeing what was going on. And of course, I'm not even going to get into it. But Patricia Arquette made her comment about equal pay for women, which was all right, I guess, during this ceremony, but in her post award show press conference or press, you know, they talked to the press afterwards, you know, took it straight to the white feminists party line. It was awesome.
And I just, it was so, and we actually tuned in just to see Common and
we lived the
to
very
the performance.
We just
them
saw them win, and then we changed
the channel.
I was like, oh no, we put it right now. They're announcing the song right now, so that's the only thing
so,
I cared about.
So we were, you know, at that point on Twitter looking at things, and we saw it coming down the pipe live, right? And I just was like, wait a minute. So we had to go back, right? Because we were recording it.
No,
like,
we didn't record it.
We were on the channel, but it was DVR'd. Because I went and watched it.
Watched it on video. We just looked at the video.
I really was like, no way she said that. Like, I almost couldn't believe that was the transcription. Like, what?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And then she, as everyone knows, doubled down on stupid. Of course did she all did. Sorts of like, this is what did? I meant. And right. look at these pictures of me and some, you know, black children right. in Africa, blah, 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 blah. But because of that, I say because of that, but like there's been like a series of like, I don't know, call it like white liberal, like quote unquote, like ally implosions. But Nicole Sandler.
This has been coming. This has been coming for a while. This situation with white, with white feminists.
I'm telling you, Nicole Sandler is going to be in the like the Wikipedia article on this. Like when there's like a lexicon of like this is what happened in 2015. There's going to be a fucking picture and like a whole timeline of her implosion. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. And so it started with Patricia Arquette and she's like, you know, yay, pumping her fist. And I guess she thought she had some relationship with Elon James. They had known each other at some level and they'd been on maybe a show together.
Well,
let's
rewind, but I really don't want to talk too much about Nicole Sandler because I don't even like giving her any platform.
Sure.
I'd rather talk about the issues that led to her in general. I really don't want to give any time to her because a lot of people are already. And if you guys want to hear about this, please go listen to Elon and his team talk about it on TWIB, TWIB.fm. You can go right there and listen to last week's shows and hear all about it. And you can also, if you choose to, listen to Nicole's show, or you can just go to at Rodimus Prime on Twitter, who live tweeted three of her shows this week and just read exactly what happened. Honestly, enough is out there about her. Don't even want to talk about her. But what I did want to talk about was kind of this situation that was she's indicative of, which is what happened.
Syndrome.
What happened is Patricia said this thing. Women of color were like, yeah, we have a problem with what you said. We expressed ourselves accordingly. And apparently, if you don't agree with white feminists, that means you're attacking them. I'm just breaking it down to the most basic of levels. And not only are we attacking them, we're not even attacking them correctly. So let me get this shit straight. You, my oppressor, you're one of, are trying to tell me, the person who has been erased in your quote unquote fight that I need to join, how to address you in my displeasure for what you're saying and doing.
Yeah, don't you know that? That's the only way it works. It's the only way it works. You're not doing it right. You got to talk to me in this very narrowly defined, specific way with which I find acceptable and just so happens to support supremacy. But yes. that's just, hey. That's the only way I'm going to listen.
It's the only way I'm going to listen. And it is crazy to me how it doesn't even occur to these people, these women, that I even said to one the other day, I was like, so if a man walked up to you and said, hey, I'm not willing to talk about misogyny and sexism unless you talk to me exactly this way that I'm telling you, how would you take that?
Yeah.
Silence. You know, because it's not about them. Actually, it's always about them. So now that we're talking about us, it's a problem. Anyways.
Well, you know, and there's...
It's ridiculous.
I saw an individual that was like, you know, some of these... women will be like, you know, yes, all men, blah, 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 blah. Well, not all white feminists. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know,
and that's obviously, anytime anybody says anything, it's not all anybody. So it's just stop with all of that bullshit in general. Obviously, I know plenty of white feminists who know what time it is. I do wish some more of them would have stepped up in this moment.
Sure.
And that's been my kind of refrain that I've been saying over and over again is that, you know, the real shame here is on the part of progressive, true progressive,
absolutely,
white feminists to not step
up. I'll take it a step further. Even progressive and liberal individuals in general.
Yes, generally speaking.
I'm so fucking frustrated with, I hate to say it, like I don't even want to call myself liberal. I think radical is more appropriate for me because fuck it. Liberal, progressive, white people are driving me fucking nuts.
Well, they're not progressive at all. They refuse to actually progress. This is the thing.
Yeah.
It's like they don't even understand what they're supposed to be. They're supposed to be the people that continually take in information and change their view based on the information that comes in. That's what progressivism is.
Mm.
That's the definition of it. It's supposed to be, we're not the people that stick our stake in and we don't move.
Don't.
It's like, no.
Well, and so
get your shit together.
And then last like 48 hours again, just starting with Patricia, then Nicole, and like one after the other, one individual who's, you know, on the surface, I think very aligned with Black Lives Matter, you know, like amplifies a bunch of stuff, but is just adamant, absolutely adamant that their vision of change involves like basically like in a nutshell, black people having the same privilege that she has. And just like doesn't understand the problem with that. And people were really polite about it. Like, listen, that's like, you're saying this, and just all day, double down, just kept just, you know, refusing to see that asking the, saying basically, I'm the oppressor and I have all this privilege. Mm-hmm. And in order for us to be equal, you have to assimilate and, you know, ascribe and acquiesce to whiteness and have all the same stuff I have. That's my vision of the future. And it's like, listen, you know, 50 fucking people told you, you know, that's not right at all. And that still is, you know, it's like, it doesn't end supremacy. What you were describing just is like, okay, now we're all sort of like in this weird way, like privileged, but it doesn't end the actual system of supremacy. And she just wouldn't get it. And ended up imploding in a, like, you know, borderline FU manner. A dude did the exact same thing like 10 hours later. And people on my timeline were like frustrated. So they used this word racist because he basically made like, he kept getting weirder and weirder. And he said some comment about like, if I'm white and walking through, you know, whatever, you know, neighborhood that's bad and you're here and you, who's going to get killed first? Like, you know, making, and the woman that did this before made another inappropriate analogy, basically saying like the word thug is like the word racist. Like that was her analogy. And people are like, whoa. Yeah. Full on breaks. Like one of those is a coded dog whistle term to denigrate. The other is a label. is a term, is an objective, like apt description. Not the fucking same at all. Right. So he does the same thing. And people are like, you can't do that. It's really inappropriate. He literally like basically says, you think I'm a racist? That's what it is. I'm not a racist. Fine. You want me to be a racist? You're a real, and drops the N bomb. Like what? I couldn't believe it. Like, if you were that willing and ready, like, it was there all along. You were just sheep in wolf's clothing. You were just fucking pretending. It was just, but that's the, like, level of, like, check a liberal individual that thinks they're trying to be helpful by just being, like, there or putting money or putting their time. Like, that's what they think they need to do rather than, like, educate and actually, like, step one, like, understand your role and privilege and, like, come in appropriately.
Right.
Like, if you just, like, barge in, like, I'm here, like, oh, fuck me. It just driving me nuts.
I broke it down for one white feminist that was on Dante Barry's timeline because I just saw her being completely belligerent. And I came in, I actually wrote a pretty long post, and I was like, I gave her a very specific example. And I said, you know, this is what the problem is. And you need to understand that it's an issue. And you really, the way I laid it out for her, because I had seen what her arguments were previously, I just shut her shit down. There was no way for her to disagree. And she's like,
right.
Well, thank you for explaining it to me. What do you think would be the steps to, you know, bridge that gap or whatever? And I said, well, the first step would be when somebody tells you that something that is said is offensive, to actually listen to them.
Did they say, you're right, or you're okay?
No, because she was embarrassed, as she should have been. Yeah. She should have been embarrassed, and she was very embarrassed, and she should have been embarrassed. I had an argument, you know, of course, because the week finished up. I don't know if it was the last week of Black History Month that made all these white women go fucking crazy, or what the fuck was going on.
28 days is too much. They got shortened Black History to 18 days.
Like, it was like a white people can't women, handle it. Like, freak out. They all went fucking schizo. So Madonna fell the other night on stage. I guess
hard.
She had a cape on me. She really fell hard.
Down like 5 stairs.
Absolutely. It was Vine. Everybody was talking about it. So she was upset because people were making fun of her age. And I will admit that I mentioned her age when I talked about it. Not that I was saying anything wrong about her age. My point was, if it was me, and this is literally
she
what I was
broke
talking
a hip.
About. No, I said if it was me and I was her age and had her career, like I would be, you know, in residence in Vegas, you know, 6 months a year and not working the rest of the time. Like I was just saying it from a not like, oh, Madonna should do this. I was saying it like, man, if it was me and I had earned the kind of cachet she has,
sure.
Shit, this is my lay back and relax time, not pull my
ass
down a staircase.
Celine Dion's younger, and she'd be making millions just sitting in Vegas.
That
millions,
Midler,
millions.
Cher,
they've all
I'm just
done
saying,
it.
Yeah. That, I, when I was talking That's about it, and it is, I guess it's ageist in that I was talking about if I was her age, because I'm just thinking about myself and how I would react to that, because I think you can still practice your craft, but I also would appreciate the privilege of having earned the right to do it however I want to do it. And that's how I would do it. But anyways, so she was in an interview afterwards, and she was talking about ageism.
Okay.
Which, as I said, I do realize, especially for women, is a huge thing. And especially in her industry, is a huge thing. Okay. She says, quote, it's still the one area where... I was going to say that again. It's still the one area where you can totally discriminate against somebody, she says, and talk shit because of their age. Only females, though, not males. So in that respect, we still live in a very sexist society. No one would dare to say a degrading remark about being black or dare to say a degrading remark on Instagram about someone being gay. But my age, anybody and everybody would say something degrading to me. And I always think to myself, why is that accepted? What's the difference between that and racism or any discrimination? End quote. So I had a couple problems with this situation.
A couple problems.
Yeah, yeah. My first is that she herself is sexist in her remarks saying, quote, only females, though, not males. That is the most sexist bullshit I've ever heard. You're saying that males who control almost every power structure in this country are not practicing ageism, but women are.
No, okay. I read that. I read that the other way around. I read that the comments made at only aging females, not aging males, that ageism is an issue for women, not an issue for men.
Oh, I see where you're saying. Old so women males are
versus
okay.
old men. Yeah, okay. It's not who's making the comments. Because she later says everybody that's right. male and female. I read that. I interpret that the other way around. Which I think there is, it's what she's saying is there's an intersection of ageism and patriarchy that,
sure.
that collide. And
imagine
I
that.
I agree. Yo, whoa, shocking. But to
says, no one would dare to say a degrading remark about being black. The fuck planet is she living on? For real. Dare to say a degrading remark on Instagram about someone being gay? What? What the fuck
That's
is
very
wrong
specific
with her?
Too. It's like,
and then this is my whole thing. People will come up and feel the need. I actually had people that I'm very good friends with come in and say, well, you know, talking about what she was trying to say, that like sexism versus racism, you know, there's differences to it because of this, that, the other thing, which I appreciate. I'm not saying that ageism doesn't exist, but I do think that this knee-jerk need to interpret what a grown-ass woman said. She fucking said what she said. I don't understand this idea that like, oh, we need to rewrite what these white women said. Listen, if a black woman said something this offensive, okay, nobody would be trying to interpret her words.
Ah, she'd
all.
Be blackballed. She'd
it
be
would
done.
Be like, can you believe this yeah. person? She would be shit on from top to bottom. But for because forever, it's a yeah. white woman. And I'm talking about black people had come and said some shit to me. Well, it's not that bad. Yeah, it is that bad. And saying, this is what somebody said to me. Why do we have to compare? I said, I don't have to compare. She compared. So don't try and put it on me because I'm calling her on her shit and say, well, can't we all just recognize each other's stuff? I go, we can. What that bitch should have done was talk about ageism and leave it at that. She didn't need to bring anybody else's plight into her conversation. She has an entire industry that's built around ageism and sexism, and she could have had a very long discussion about that. What does that have to do with black people being or not being degraded? What does that have to do with
zero
LGBTQ community members being degraded? Not a fucking thing. So my whole point is, don't come at me saying don't compare when this bitch compared.
That was her point.
That was her entire point.
Her point was
so
that
don't
comparison.
Come at me with this. Oh, you know, we gotta respect people. No, we don't.
There's a lot of, there's so much there. It's ridiculous, but I just doesn't matter. You know, Madonna's
ridiculous.
I've never cared for her. I don't really give a hoot, but it's just the number and frequency and volume of people being real stupid and not owning it and not acknowledging it. And then trying to like, you know, deny, deflect, you know, other people come in and try to like make equivocations. It's just all insanity.
And all this bullshit about just like, I heard several people like, oh, well, you know, she's just an actress. I think Nicole Sandler even said this about Patricia
that don't
Arquette.
Mean shit.
You know, she's used to just reading other people's lines. Like, so she's an idiot. Listen,
that's your rationale.
You're in the same sentence saying she's so Listen. Smart. She made this amazing, wonderful thing. I want to support, but she's too dumb to even put a sentence together.
And I don't understand where we as a country are in it with celeb, and I really hate the focus on individuals, but when they're high profile individuals, it's a teachable moment. So I think the focus on those individuals, you know, you get more because they're high profile, but I do think there's more value in focusing on individual and why their behavior is problematic. But we don't focus on is what they do afterwards. And I don't understand why the preferred PR move seems to be like, I didn't say it, I didn't mean it, I didn't do it, oops, it's going to blow over. And I don't know what we as a society can do to impact change on that, but I'd like to just, you know, and it's not perfect. There's, you know, I'll just preface this. Jan Rancic made her comments about
Zendaya's
hair, yeah, and someone like Patchouli, and it was, you know, really inappropriate, but she did make an apology, and she did, you know, two things specifically. She acknowledged it, like, you know, it's not like, ooh, I didn't. And she started to, in the beginning, you could see her tweets were like, I didn't mean it that way. I really like you. You're a friend. And, but at least she acknowledged it and kind of like owned it to some degree.
She did two things that are necessary for an apology to be real. One is that you have to actually be sorry for the thing you did. Not, I'm sorry if you were offended.
You, right.
I'm sorry you were offended. No. It's,
I'm sorry I did this.
I did this thing. Yep. Also, something I don't think I've ever heard in a public apology was she acknowledged, and I'm actually want to get her actual words, where she said, I want everyone to know that I didn't intend to hurt anybody. And then she says, and this is the important part of her apology to me.
Yes.
But I've learned that it's not my intent that matters. It's the result. And the
outcome.
Result is that people are offended, including Zendaya. That's not okay. Okay. That to me was like, oh,
yeah.
Oh, my God.
Like a ding for that.
Even if it was written by a PR person, whatever. But just to say that out loud.
Absolutely.
Like, yep, my bullshit ass intentions don't
matter.
Don't matter a lick at all. And then she also acknowledged that she needs to be a lot more aware of cliches and stereotypes and the damage that they do, and that she's responsible, as we all are, to work and not perpetuate them further. So
again, she owned it, she acknowledged it, and she even, I think, took a little bit of a step in the, not just acknowledging, but in part of the acknowledgement, you have to acknowledge that it has hurt somebody.
Yes.
My actions and words had this impact on you.
Yes.
I stand here and accept that. And she basically said, I'm going to learn from it and I'm going to do better. Not in those exact words, but anyone who follows me on Twitter, on my blogs, right? I've said that just repeatedly, you know, you are going to fuck up. Doing this work, you're going to step in it. You're going to make a mistake. You're going to fuck up.
Yep.
Plan on it.
Yep.
Expect it. Because then when it does happen, you're not derailed like, oh my God, I fucked up. I can't believe it. Like, I'm not saying go out and try to fuck up. Of course, do the most you can to not fuck up, but be prepared to fuck up.
Right.
And then when you do, you can handle it so much better.
Absolutely.
And the way to handle it is, I accept this. I own it. I apologize. I'm sorry I did this. Not I'm sorry I hurt you. And it had this impact on you. And I'm never going to do it again. I'm going to learn from it. I'm going to do better. And in fact, I take a step further. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to learn from that. I, you know, and understand when you make an apology, like, and I hate to say this in specifically with Twitter, it's like a little unforgiving. There's definitely you can't expect the person to be like, I accept your apology. And white people in particular do this, like, I'm so sorry, please forgive me right now. I'm not a racist. Please forgive me. Please forgive me. Please forgive me. It's like, if it's a real apology, it's there and the other person can say, fuck you. And the apology still stands.
Right.
It needs nothing from the other person. Otherwise,
right,
it's not an apology.
Right.
Otherwise, it's a fucking like, please, you know, I don't know what, forgive me. And that's not on anybody that you grieve. You know, if you grieve somebody, they don't have to forgive you, you know. But I really appreciate Juliana taking some ownership, taking some actual steps. And as you said, that intent does not matter shit. It's the outcome.
Absolutely. And Zendaya did accept her apology. So anyways, there's that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
She did. Yeah,
she did. Mm-hmm. That's very nice of her.
She did. Yeah. And her response was great, too. So.
Okay, we'll have to look at. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know what time it is.
Am I black enough for ya? Am I black enough for ya? Am I black enough for ya?
Yay!
Am I black enough for ya?
So, Obese, back at his lame duck blackness.
Yeah.
Getting it done. He vetoed the Keystone XL bill.
I want like a big like a veto sign.
Now
like
it's the only the third veto of his entire presidency.
I know.
Which is kind of not shocking. I'm surprised by it, but I guess, you know, he was able to get whatever done.
I think that shows a level of ineptitude in Congress and the polarization, that the things that came through were the things that he was, you know, involved with and like, okay, this is coming through.
Yeah, for sure. So they also, his administration, however, issued its 10th veto threat of the year on Monday, promising to scuttle a House bill to repeal the Affordable Care Act. The veto threat wasn't surprising. Obama has long said he would defend his landmark legislative achievement with his veto pen if necessary. But if it continues to put the beginning of the 114th Congress into record-setting territory, 9 veto threats against House bills plus a verbal threat against an Iran sanctions bill being drafted in the Senate, that makes more bills under threat of veto to begin the year since the Office of Management and Budget first started issuing formal positions on bills under President Reagan in 1985. Monday's threat was also noteworthy in that most veto threats issued under the Obama administration, including the Keystone Pipeline one, have said that only the unnamed senior advisors would recommend a veto. Monday's threat said the president would veto the bill. So he's like, yeah, no, this isn't any advisors. I'm telling you this shit myself. So that's how that's going.
Awesome.
And also
I support that.
And when he did veto the Keystone Pipeline, he didn't even do a press release about it.
He was just did it.
Vetoed.
Fuck you. Done.
Fuck you. I warned you. So here you go.
And that whole thing's ridiculous. Who puts it? It's not even. It's like building a highway through our entire country and ecosystem for a company outside of our own. It's not even a U.S. company on the one end. To transport their oil? The fuck?
But we're talking about people who, most of them don't believe in global warming. So, I mean.
Even beyond global warming, it's just dumber than fuck. Like,
it's dumber than fuck, but I do think that there's a level of like, when, because basically not believing in global warming, it's like going against, you know, science. And so you would go along with some dumbass shit like this, which also, if you think about it scientifically, is stupid as hell.
Yeah, but we go for dumb shit all the time.
True that, true that.
What was that thing we built here in Camden for the 76ers?
Oh, God.
That was the dumbest fucking thing. A practice facility. They got a 10-year tax abatement because they're going to bring all these jobs, 17, like 30.
Yeah, but people are going to actually use the facility. So that's very different.
That's true.
I mean, for real, I'm just saying.
It's like, it's not just a fucking road that nobody drives on.
The thing is going to be actually used. So there's that. There.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Talking about interracial dating? What are we doing?
Oh, also, but just one other quick lame duck blackness that he was featured on Blackish this week when they were talking about doing the dozens.
Yeah.
And Dre was talking to Andre, young Andre, about doing it. And he said, even our president does it. And, of course, played the best. Definitely what will go down as the best.
I won both
Obama.
Of them.
I won both of them. Yeah.
That's the shit.
The best. He's just, yeah.
I have no more campaigns to run. I know because I won both of them.
Anyways, so yeah, that happened too.
Love it.
So yeah, let's do. You had sent me this link to this question. Does having a racial preference when dating make us racist? And actually, it's funny that you mentioned this because Roderick, shout out to him, Rodimus Prime and the Black Guy Who Tips this week, had posted, I think, on either Twitter and Facebook or something, a link to a photo of Reggie Bush and his wife and made a very innocuous comment that she is a splitting image of Kim Kardashian. And I'm not kidding. Like, the girl looks exactly like her.
Reggie Bush, the football player?
Yes, that used to date Kim. Okay. So he just said, wow, this Reggie's wife really looks like Kim K. Just kind of like, yeah, you know, whatever. And you would have thought, I don't know, somebody, they slapped the girl. I mean, the way people were in his mentions, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, I have
about
seen
Rod?
It. Yes.
For saying that these two people look alike?
And I was like, did something? I literally tweeted him.
What's
I
so offensive about saying something?
I said, Rod, did I miss something? I thought you just noticed a passing resemblance between the two people. He's like, nope, you didn't miss a thing. I really don't know. But it put me in mind of this article because clearly Reggie has a type. And clearly Kimberly Kardashian also has a type.
Okay.
As evidence in their dating history and the people that they have been with and are currently with. So it put me in mind of that because I had said to you that I I have felt that people only talk about racial preferences in dating when the people involved are in an interracial relationship.
Absolutely.
When you date in your same race, nobody's like, oh, why'd you date that black guy?
Choose a, yeah.
Yeah, nobody says that.
No.
So, but you're saying, but this video actually is talking about the opposite. So
correct.
I'm going to play real quick. It's only 2 minutes. So
okay.
Let's just hear it.
Does having a racial preference when dating make us racist? Most people prefer to date someone that's the same race as them. That's not an opinion, it's a fact, based on the behavior of 25 million users of this online dating site, which raises an obvious question
Cupid.
That no one really wants to ask. Does having a racial preference make us racist? Aside from the fact that most people prefer someone of the same race, you see that across the board, white men do really well with women of all races. And by that I mean white men are more likely to be considered attractive and they're more likely to get a reply when they send a message, while the odds for black and Asian men are really low. Mm. When it comes to the ladies, white and Asian women score really well and black women fare badly. Mm. There's data on same-sex couples too. Although those same preferences are a little bit less pronounced, they're still there. And these patterns of racial bias aren't just on OkCupid. They can be seen on a Facebook dating app and in a number of academic studies too. So what's going on? I think it's partly about racial stereotypes. In 2013, Essence magazine conducted a survey which found that images of black women consistently fell into the same categories. The angry black woman, the baby mama, the uneducated sister, the unhealthy fat black woman. Do any of those sound like great partners? Asian men are also portrayed in ways that could make them seem undesirable. They're often seen on screen as overbearing and sexist, geeky, or the sexless sidekick. They're virtually never the romantic lead. Mm. It's not all about who you turn away, though. Positive reactions to a user's profile can be racist, too. Asian women who score highly have shared some of the incredibly offensive messages they've received. Messages that assume that they'll be docile and submissive and respectful to a man. Mm. Again, it's relevant that there just aren't that many positive representations of Asian women in popular culture. This isn't about a lack of exposure to people of other races. When people are dating online, they have the chance to interact with just about anyone. This is about exposure to negative racial stereotypes. Listen, there are all kinds of personal factors that influence our dating choices. I get that someone might feel they have a lot more in common with someone of the same race. I understand it a lot more if that person is a minority who doesn't want to risk becoming someone's exotic experiment, a political statement, or being just plain misunderstood. But when you look at the big picture, the data shows that people are systematically expressing preferences that echo the negative racial stereotypes that exist in society. So isn't it worth at least asking how society might be shaping our individual preferences? That our views on what is beautiful and who makes a good partner might be affected by the way racial groups are being presented to us. We've started to understand how systematic racism affects the choices made in government, in work, and in education. Why not try and understand how it affects our romantic decisions too?
Mm.
So, yeah, so that was very interesting.
And that's been my, I don't want to say my theory, but so I just want to say, based on her report, it sounds like I could fucking slay it on OkCupid because I prefer black
apparently,
women.
Apparently you could.
I'm on the high end of the desirable side as a white man.
Right.
And
Are you?
Oh, man. I set you up. You need like a ba-doom chin.
Ba-doom boom, yeah.
But no, I you know, and I've talked about this even on the podcast. If and you've asked me, and I think that up until I've heard this report or read this article, you're right. Almost every discussion has always been between white people, and the question would be, would you date somebody that wasn't white?
Right.
And that as a young boy was even common. You just, you know, people talk about those things. It's kind of like, it's taboo. It's like this, it's like that. And for me, I didn't set out. Like, so I think there are people that develop a preference or whatever, for whatever reason, for the opposite, right? For interracial rather than intraracial.
Right.
And some people have described, I think, that can come off as like fetishizing, like kind of like a little weird, like, oh, I really prefer, you know, I only like this or that. But for me, and I think for you as well, that wasn't even the intent. We just sort of met each other, you know, over a period of time, became friends and then fell in love and, you know, just so happened to be interracial. Right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I think that's, I don't say that's common, but I think that happens. It's not like that big a deal. But so when she said that it's not about access to options and choices on
right.
online dating.
Everybody has options and choices.
I don't say I disagree, but I think that by then it's too late. By
right.
then the indoctrination, not indoctrination, but, you know, supremacy, for lack of a better description. So I really was thinking it seems like to me that question you and I have about musical preferences. Do you like the music you like because that's what you like? Or do you like the music that you like because that's what was available and presented to you in a format and a modality with which you consumed? Some people like radio. Some people like records. Some people bought stuff. Some, you know what I mean? Like your musical tastes and preferences evolve over time. But to some degree, they're, you know, really only shaped by what's available. Even in a bigger meta context, I only really listen to Western music. I don't listen to any, you know, I don't have access to anything that's current and modern from the Pan-Africa Asian musical world at all. I don't have any. I could seek those things out, but they'd be much, you know, there's a lot less opportunities to engage with that type of music in a way with which I engage with music normally in my day-to-day life. It's framed by being in a Western shape.
I feel like, well, just because music is Spotify and Pandora, like you can listen to K-pop.
Yes, but you have to go a little bit out of your way is what I mean. So in that same sense, we're, you know, as a country, segregated as hell.
Mm-hmm.
And people, you know, we already know this in social media. They're more likely to not have diverse circles. They live in non-diverse circles. So there's a vacuum. There's a void of opportunity, for lack of a better description, to have a reinforcement history at all. You know, by and large, many, many white people like myself. We talked already today about me going to college and talking to Ennis. But up pre-24, I had zero historical, reinforcement history, neither good nor bad. It was just there. It was nothing. It was a void of reinforcement either in either direction with regards to black people in America. So what happens is that you get shaped by, you know, culture, media, and it's fucking anti-black as hell. Mm. It's like white supremacy's like purpose is to, and there's studies for it. Like the news, if you were to take the amount of black people that are shown on the local news as a percentage of airtime and then correlate that with the populational percentage, it's way overrepresented.
Right.
But, you know, there's like, you'd think that black people commit like, and even they ask people on a bus, how much crime is committed by black people versus white people. They overestimate black people every single time because right. The news
makes it seem like that. Sure.
So it's not like shocking to me that in a mostly white environment with a lack of any reinforcement history, that your mind would be shaped through a narrative that's deliberately anti-black. It's deliberately, you know, pro-white supremacy. So when people say like, oh, I would just prefer somebody that's white, absolutely. I think, I'm not saying it's racist. That's a stronger term, but it's racial bias. And it plays out in ways that I think people don't always understand.
And I think that in dating, you know, I agree. And obviously, when we talk about the concept of white supremacy and how it affects society, it affects every part of society. There's no part of society that it doesn't permeate and seep and inform. Okay, so let's just say that. I will say, though, about dating and love and all of those kinds of things that I feel that there's a lot of preferences that come into play, and they are almost always based on biases that you bring into the equation.
Sure.
You don't want to date someone that has less money than you. You may not want to date somebody that has less education than you do. You may not want to date somebody that comes from a different part of the country than you do.
Absolutely.
You may want to be in the same culture that you come from. There's
absolutely
lots of not even
religion.
There's a lot of
all
biases
kinds,
that you're going to bring into
absolutely
this situation because it's a very big thing. It's not small. So
no, who you partner with in life is a huge decision. So you bring a lot into that, a lot.
But I will say it's interesting because studies show that black women are in general the slowest to acclimate to interracial dating and interracial relationships.
Really?
Oh yeah.
So I wouldn't be as good on OkCupid. Damn it.
Haha. So Allison Kugel, who runs, who works interracialdatingcentral.com, she says in recent years, they've seen a boost of black women signing up for the site, but those women still struggle with a perceived stigma. Quote, they will say the black community is very patriarchal. So while black men sort of have carte blanche to date whoever they want to date, as a black woman will get a lot of backlash for dating interracially.
Huh.
She says that the black women who are able to overcome their nerves are often able to find lasting love. Brown skin and darker skin black women are actually getting asked out quite a bit by Caucasian men. Okay. Let's stop there for one second, because this actually brings a little bit of a point back when we were talking earlier about white feminism and intersectionality, because I had a conversation with somebody and she didn't quite understand about how intersectionality affects feminism.
Okay.
And what that could mean as a difference between a black woman and a white woman both fighting for equal rights as a woman. And I said to her, well, You as a white woman, I know a very big thing for white women is to own their sexuality because they've been, you know, not trained, but they've been pigeonholed by patriarchy in our society to be virginal, to not be sexually promiscuous, to not own their sexuality. It's why, you know, it's this virgin, you know, Madonna type of thing that goes on. And so you'll see things like the slut walk, you know, these things that, that feminists do. Have you heard of these things?
I have.
Okay. Why are you saying it like that?
Just, you know, I'm not going to weigh in on slut walks.
Why? I don't understand. What do you mean?
I don't know. Do you think they're a good thing? Owning the, and it's, maybe I don't understand them.
Okay. Well, they're protest marches. They started in Toronto, Ontario, and they actually happen all over the globe now. And they protest against explaining or excusing rape by referring to any aspect of a woman's appearance and for a call,
no, I'm for
a
that.
Call to end rape culture. But they call it this slut walk because people will, you know, slut shame.
Walk of shame.
So it's kind right. of the opposite of that. And so they'll dress with like almost like no clothing on and like, yes, even even I'm not asking for it, even though I'm not wearing anything. So there's this whole, you know, movement surrounding that. And another piece of that is owning their sexuality and being able to express themselves sexually. So that's great. And I understand there's a need to fight for that. But as Black women, we are on the flip side of that coin and have been incredibly over-sexualized in society and continue to be. We're seen as the Jezebel, the harlot. You'll see if a girl is being sexually abused, they'll refer to her as fast if it's a Black girl. So the idea of attaching ourselves to something like slut walk would be problematic for me as a Black woman because that is not the...
That's not liberating.
It's not liberating at all. And in fact, it's playing into stereotypes that people are already putting on me.
When I said my issue and why I wasn't weighing in is I personally have a little bit of an issue with the word slut.
Of course. But they're trying to...
they're trying to own it. I understand. And that's why I said I don't have a say in that. You know, I'm not of that community.
I wasn't asking for your opinion. I was just making sure you knew what I was talking about.
Yeah, yeah. And I hear where you're going with the fact that it's not...
I'm talking about this intersectional point because it really does illustrate why it's important. You can't put blanket statements on things and why you have to pay attention to intersectionality because just like when Patricia Arquette said, oh, we need to fight for equal pay, she quotes the 74 cents on a dollar statistic, and that is so far off of what Black women make, what Latino women make in comparison, and it doesn't even take into account that white women make more than Black men. So when you come into these spaces and you just want to talk about your issue, you have to be aware of other people's issues, and you have to be able to know that you're just talking about you and make that clear. And it's okay for that.
And
you
and I even say I agree with that, but I do think that there needs to be a more general understanding of just traditional economics, like. First of all, this trickle down, maker taker, that shit doesn't work. We know it. The actual thing historically over the last 200 years, it's forever and ever shown the biggest and greatest increase in the entire GDP and output has been lifting up the lower and middle class. The rising tide lifts all boats theory. And it's like, you know, how can you, if you want your 74 cents to go up, fight for the guy that's making, you know, 38 cents.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
no, and I said that. That's the woman that I shut down on Dante's timeline. It was the same thing. I ended my piece and I said, if you want to be in solidarity, then come fight with us. Because trust me when I tell you, when Black women are free, we'll all be free.
Yeah, I'm with
and
you.
And I, you know, just like it just is what it is. But anyways, let's get back to this interracial thing. I'm going to continue talking about what this person was talking about. But they talk about brown skin and darker skin women actually getting asked out quite a bit by Caucasian men. And so it put me in mind when you were talking about fetishizing. And so did the video we played before from The Guardian. And it's interesting because we've already had discussions here about on television. It seems like every white man has
everywhere.
A fucking Black woman. I mean,
everywhere.
Every TV show.
Every show. It's like I feel like it's now a device that has become so accepted that it's like, oh, here's how we're going to have diversity. A Black woman that dates a white guy. Bing.
Right.
Just drop it in, you know, almost casually.
Right.
You know, like it was like, remember the Cheerios commercial?
Yeah.
Had a little bit of uproar. It's like now that's, you know, is out of the bag kind of, so to speak. And it's just like, you know how Hollywood just eats itself with like repeating stupid stuff, but it seems like this just conceptually, and I don't, it's weird to me because there's so few instances of black love between two individuals, male, 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 female, you know, and then when there is a black male with a white female character, it's,
which is almost never,
A, it's almost never, but when it is, it's the relationship is the taboo nature of the thing. It's
right,
like, look who's
about.
Coming to dinner,
right.
Jungle Fever. It's right. Like, it's about that thing.
Right.
Whereas what you and I are talking about, it just is. It's like a shortcut to diversity. Like,
right. They don't, on The Flash, they don't address the fact that Barry is in
white.
Love with Iris and she's
yeah,
a black woman.
Not at all.
There's no discussion about it at all. Or Jeremy and Bonnie on The Vampire Diaries.
Let me ask you this though, and someone pointed this out on Twitter, and I don't know if I have enough data to really make a statement on it, but that the black women frequently in those instances are biracial, lighter skinned. You know, they're not nearly as dark complected in these relationships. But I don't have any examples.
Well, I definitely would not consider Kerry Washington lighter skinned or biracial. And I also would not consider...
I didn't say all.
And Kat, that's not, I'm going not, through the ones okay, I just mentioned. Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't consider Kat Graham dark, light-skinned
can
or
we just,
biracial.
Can we just consider Kat Graham for a second?
You can consider her. She's pretty hot. And
sorry,
who else did I mention? I mentioned Iris. Yeah, I don't... She's
Graham.
Definitely not light-skinned. What are the other ones? That aren't, I'm just talking about on TV. I think that there does tend to be a portrayal of black women in a certain way. I think that's changing some... but
yeah.
You know, it is what it is. I think that when they show black love, it tends to be a biracial woman or a woman that's lighter complected, like Tracy Ellis Ross, for example. But when it's a white man and a black woman, I think it definitely tends to be a black woman who is clearly black and is darker complected, you know?
Yeah.
I think because they don't address it, I think that they use the look to not have to address it. Like, there's
right.
no ambiguity.
Right.
And
right,
they don't want the ambiguity there, you know? So it's kind of crazy. Oh, and what's the other one? Oh, Sleepy Hollow, which I'm going to talk about in a little bit.
Gabby.
But I do think, you know, and this is the thing we talk about all the time, and I think if we mentioned it on the Tronilla show before, like, I joined a couple of these, you know, interracial relationship groups,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, for people that are in interracial
right,
relationships.
Right.
And it's just weird because they seem to be like, that's all they're about.
Like hookup sites almost.
No, I wouldn't even say that. It's not definitely not. There's quite a few of them that are meant for people that are just in interracial relationships, but they seem to be all about that. And it's kind of strange to me because obviously there's a lot about our relationship that is unique because we're interracial.
Right.
We probably wouldn't be doing the podcast otherwise.
It's called the interracial job.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't think it defines us as a couple either.
Well,
and I also know for a fact that it had nothing to do with us getting
correct.
Together.
And I said that earlier. But, and I think not only does it not define us, and this sounds almost, you know, I don't mean to like erase the fact that we are an interracial couple,
mm-hmm.
but there's been more than a few instances where I'd like borderline forget it. Where it's just, it's not.
Well, that's just you.
Yeah, no, I said I didn't mean to erase it. I agree. You
that's
know.
Just you. Only the white half gets
only
to
the
do
white
that.
Half gets to do that.
Yeah.
I said borderline. I said borderline.
Yeah. I've never forgot that. No. No.
No. I said borderline.
Yeah. I'm not even borderline. There's no, definitely not.
Definitely not.
I ever forget. But,
well, what I mean to say is that it's so. Does not define us that it's able to be.
No, but see, the thing is, I joined the groups hoping it would be a place to have like funny stories, like you learning about natural hair or, I don't know, me being grossed out that you eat orange sherbet and cranberry juice. It's like the whitest thing I've ever heard.
Be grossed out about. It's like a breakfast root beer float.
It's
so
disgusting.
Fucking good.
It's like,
all right, Johnners, listen to me. Cranberry juice with a scoop of fucking orange sherbet, like bloop, right, like a glass of juice.
Gross.
Cranberry juice.
Nobody.
Straight up
nobody,
sherbet, like rainbow orange sherbet.
That is some white people
oh,
shit.
Someone's gotta hear me now and tweet me later. Please.
Yeah,
I'm not the only
they'll
psycho.
They'll tweet you. It's white people. They will
I'm
tweet
sure
you.
It'll be white people.
I'm not.
I need
not,
the white people to defend my orange sherbet.
I'm not disputing the fact that people drink it. Your brothers fucking drink it. My point is that it's white people shit is my point.
All right. So if there's an individual that
having
identifies,
one, having
identifies
one,
as a
having one
person
meat.
Of color. If there's one, I want the proverbial one of my friends. If there's one black person listening that has had cranberry
nope.
juice with orange sherbet and likes that shit,
nope.
Tag me.
Not gonna happen. Definitely not. So one other thing interracial wise that came out, this Tiffany commercial came out called Will You? And it's obviously no Tiffany. They're trying to sell them diamonds.
Amp it up.
Amp it up with the diamonds. So it's, I don't know if I'm going to even play the whole thing, but let me see how long it is. The
commercial is usually pretty emotional. Oh,
so it's a minute, so we can listen
Will
to
you?
It.
Wow, this is weird. Will you let me be the guy who gets to make fun of you because you take 3 minutes to butter your toast in the morning?
Emotional already.
The guy you drink bourbon with. I need you to know that as perfect as this ring is, it won't be beautiful till it's sparkling
on the hand you used to beat me at poker.
And tuck your hair behind your ear. And fix the buttons on my shirt when I get them wrong.
Every life together starts with a question.
What I'm trying to say is, will you marry me?
Will you?
I'll stop it there. So it's a minute commercial and you heard the sappy bullshit that they said. They have five couples they feature. They're not real couples. They're actors and models or whatever. Five couples they feature. They have three couples that are white guy, white girl, various, you know, shades of hair and age and all of that. They have a gay male couple, and then they have a white man and a black woman who are featured probably most prominently in,
correct,
in
the
thing. They're
couple.
The kind of the couple. They have, I would say, the most, they have an actual storyline.
They have the most screen
everybody
time.
Else is like, correct. They just show them a couple times, but it, with the black woman and the white man, he's getting
the reveal.
Cab and he's leaving and then he comes back and then, you know, he asks her and
they're the big reveal at the end of the commercial.
Yeah.
They're the central part.
They're the central part of the commercial. So I thought it was interesting that they know the model that was in the commercial. She was on America's Next Top Model, so shout out to her. That's a big gig to get. So just rounding that up,
couples taking over the world,
taking up couples like us.
Yeah,
you and me, got
doing it. And shout out to Chonilla too.
Yeah, all right, Chonilla. Yeah, shout them out.
Yeah,
and also shout out to Black Girl in Maine.
Oh right,
yeah,
Deacon Blue
and Deacon Blue. Shout out to them. We got to get a whole
we should get like an interracial genre.
You know.
We talked about her coming on the show, didn't we?
We did. I think their schedule's kind of tough, but we're going to try. I would love to get the six of us on a show of some sort of hangout or something, and just kind of talk about some of the issues surrounding Black Lives Matter and being in an interracial relationship,
sure,
during that.
Because you were talking with her about, you know, just... They're like, we even talk on this show, just like, man, white people are driving me nuts. And you've taken it, like, you've been at the receiving end of a lot different level of vitriol and even just straight up like hate. And there's been times where you're like, I can't even look at a fucking white person.
Just,
you're married to one.
That just happened once.
Hey, it happened. But
it was a bad day. It was just the one time. But it was, I was like, I can't. I need to be by myself, dude.
I respect
and,
that.
Yeah, and Black Girl in Maine, shout out to her. She was like, yep. Some days you're just like, fuck this. Anyways, TV. So some cool TV.
Parks and Rec.
Sadly,
ended.
Parks and Recs ended this week. And take note, how to get
how to do a finale.
How to do a
properly.
Goddamn finale properly.
You know, and I think it was good that they were given enough flexibility and time. They said, okay, this is going to be your last season.
Yeah.
We're going to give you the entire year to write it out.
To be
you're
clear.
Right. You're right.
They had and, the and, same thing.
And typically when you're given that, there's hopefully some payoff for long-term viewers.
Right.
And I thought Parks and Rec, not just their last episode, but
the
most
whole
like,
last season.
And even the last like three or four episodes in particular, the Johnny Karate really one, it just was so good. They made Gary Gergis the friggin' mayor.
For like 10 terms. It's the best.
Oh, man. It was good.
Even though they misspell his name on his tombstone. So and also, his wife did not age. Christy
Brinkley
did exactly
age.
The same age. So it ended, and they used this really great device of they all got together one last time to fix a swing in the park. And Leslie had a moment, Leslie Knope, played by Amy Poehler, with each character. And as she touched them in one way or another, like held their hand or touched their arm or they high-fived, it kind of did a flash forward to each of their futures to kind of show you what they did after this time where they were together and everybody was kind of going on to bigger, better things. And so I wanted to run through them very quickly and then have you tell me what was your favorite and least favorite one. And I'll do the same. So, of course, Donna Meagle, Donna and her husband, Joe, they just got married earlier this season. They live in Seattle. They're building visible space haystacks around the Space Needle to make it less visible. And Donna is doing really well in real estate. They have been using all of her money to travel around the world, including to some place named Middle Korea. But she decides to donate the money and start a foundation called Teach Yourself to help further Joe's
her husband,
efforts to keep math in schools, which apparently was at risk in 2023. And as a side note, the best part of this flash forward is learning that Donna worked on a NASCAR pit crew and came in ninth on Italy's Got Talent.
Ninth. Okay.
So then we have Craig. He is the loud talking guy. He ends up getting married to Typhoon, who is Ron's new barber. And Ron's the best man. Horatio Sands is officiating. And then they go forward into the future even more. They're in some sort of spaceship drinking champagne to celebrate their anniversary. And Craig has a bunch of complaints per usual. Andy and April, they are at Halloween and Andy wants to have a baby. April's not too sure. Leslie pumps her up. They end up getting pregnant and they have a baby named Jack. Dr. Saperstein delivers said baby. Also in this reveal, Ben is dressed as the Lamplighter, a character from his new board game, Cones of Dunshire, Winds of Chamora. Just FYI.
Cones of Dunshire.
John Ralphio, 2022, he dies and he asked for Bend Over by Lil Jon featuring Tyga to be played in tribute. But it turns out he was just running an insurance scam with his sister, Mona Lisa, so they could go and open a casino, which they do. Tom's Bistro decides to throw it at the wall and do 20 restaurants in the next 5 years. And Ben, who has won his congressmanship at that point, says, yes, this all sounds good. You should do it. And it's a huge failure, which is narrated by Tom doing a documentary about his own failures. He'd made it himself. And broke, destitute, and swaggerless, his wife, Lucy, urges him to come up with a new idea. And he does a best-selling book called Failure, an American Success Story. And the best part is that he outlines his book that there are 7 specific types of successful people, and they are called the Leslie, the Ben, the Ron, the Tom, the April, the Andy, and the Donna. He said no one should want to be a Gary.
And what
did he have? Gary goes, he's talking about me.
And didn't he have a second book, a follow up to the failure
book?
Yeah,
I don't remember what the second book was.
And the
called.
Best part when that was, he's talking about, there's a different scene later on because they each have these visions, right? These
right.
Fast
and
words.
They're in each other's they're visions. Each other. Right.
So it's someone else's one. People are talking about him in the book. And he goes, like, oh, I was just reading it. And I think it was.
It was Ben. Ben's like, oh, I took it and I came out as a Tom. No, I got to rework
it. It was because Ben's the one that's married to Quincy Jones' daughter, right?
No, that's Chris.
That's who said it.
No, it was Ben because Tom hates Ben. He always thinks he's the biggest dork.
Well, whatever. He's like, I'm a Tom. No, right. No, I got to go rework it and runs right. out.
And then Gary, as you mentioned, was the interim mayor after the old mayor played by Bill Murray died. And a few weeks into 2017, he wins a write-in campaign. He holds on to office for 10 terms. He lives to be 100. He dies happily in his sleep. Amy and Ben, it says Amy and Ben, but it should say Leslie and Ben. Leslie and Ben attend his funeral, but suspiciously, a guard behind them in a dark suit tells them it's time to go. And of course, they misspelled Gary's name as Tombstone, as I said. Ron Swanson, his once very good, is a
very
successful business, and he quits and he asks Leslie what to do next, and she installs him as the park ranger, the head of the park that's in Pawnee, the national park in Pawnee, and he's going to be superintendent for that. And he has to work for the federal government, but he's pretty happy about it. He also used some of his earnings and bought half of Langevagen. Whiskey, right?
Yeah.
And so
Langevulen.
Yeah, Langevulen, that's it. So Leslie and Ben, they are at a dinner with Joe Biden.
They don't have his speech in that synopsis, do they?
No, they do not have his speech.
Dang it.
I know, they don't. Maybe next show you can play it. It comes up that the current Democratic governor of Indiana is not going to be running for governor. And so the DNC approaches Leslie, and Jen, the crazy headhunter chick, approaches Ben, Congressman Ben, to do it. And they go back to Kapani to kind of think about it. Anne and Chris are there. They have two kids and they're moving back so Chris can work in administrations at Indiana University. He's obviously still in perfect health. April's pregnant with a baby number two. And when Ben approached the group with their dilemma, Ben says, nope, Leslie's running for governor because it was her child. It was in her childhood dream journal, which was great. My favorite part of that little bit piece was that Anne and Chris's son is talking to Leslie and Ben's daughter, and they're like, oh my God, it's happening. They're falling in love right now because that's their plan.
Don't look at it. Turn away.
And when Anne comes into the room, she shoves her husband aside like, fuck you.
That's the best.
Anne's here. It's great because that's how I am with Ellie. So it's awesome. Like, get away from me. Ellie's here.
It was a good 7-year series finale.
Yeah.
They gave a lot.
And then the last part is Leslie, of course, 35. She's speaking at Indiana University. She's receiving an honorary doctorate. The university is naming her the library after. Ugh, she hates libraries, as you know. She's a parks girl. After two successful terms as governor, she gives a great speech about the importance of hard work and a great time, and says that soon a new unknown challenge awaits me, which to me even now is thrilling. And that was the end. So you don't know what happens.
Nope for president.
Nope for president, or Ben for president. You could be either one of them. You never know.
It was good.
So what was your favorite and least favorite?
My favorite was Tom and his Book of Failure. Just because I love Aziz Ansari. He cracks me up.
He is funny.
And surprisingly, my least favorite was Andy and April.
Yeah.
The Halloween. It was like, because as characters, I don't say I expected more of the two characters, mm-hmm. but there's so much there. And
yeah.
They're hilarious together. They have a great chemistry. I would have expected it to be a little bit, I don't know. This wasn't bad. This was my least favorite one. What about you?
My favorite was Donna because I love Donna. And
Teach yourself.
I just love her generally, and I just love that they've always made her unapologetically herself. Like, she is a black woman. She's totally, you know, in charge of herself and okay with that. And I just love everything about her. And so her future really exuded that Donna-ness of her. So I love that. I love that they didn't have kids and that they were super happy. Mm. So all of those, I really loved all of those things. I do have to say that I was most disappointed also with Amy, with April and Andy's storyline, because I just thought it was kind of like, oh, so they're just going to turn into Ben and
it just wasn't
and
good.
Leslie,
it
which
was weird.
Is weird when they spent this whole season having April realizing she doesn't want to go the same path that Leslie went. And then she did. So it's kind of weird, but all in all, A+, and we will miss it, but it went out in a great way. And I think 7 seasons, I appreciate that.
I do
and I
too.
Can appreciate
that's
it and
a,
not be bad.
A good period of
not
time.
Be sad about losing it because, you know, things run their course.
Absolutely. And I said the last 3 episodes were really good, but the second to last episode, they gave Gary his sending away as mayor. It was unbelievable.
Oh my God.
Because
like, so
he's the butt of like literally like every joke every for joke. The last everything forever.
Right.
Period.
Remember, it was supposed to be Tom's proposal. They were going all
right,
out.
Right.
And Tom decides to take it a whole different way. It was a much better choice. And so he got the balloon ride and he got everything else. It was good.
It was sweet.
Sleepy Hollow's, hopefully just season finale, but it could be the series finale, was this week. It was unbelievably good. The show is so good. I thought it did a great job of wrapping up some stuff and kind of setting things on a new course as well. And somebody said online, you know, shout out to Sleepy Hollow for not having the magical Negro syndrome in their finale. There's witches and there's some supernatural stuff on the show. It's called Sleepy Hollow. But the black characters on the show are like real as fuck. And I love that about it. And that you know, Abby has to go back in time, or she goes back into the past, Revolutionary War time, and people are not happy with her black ass back there. And to see her kind of trying to navigate that space, and she interacts with one of her ancestors, and it was just really well written, well acted, well done. And I hope that the show comes back, because it's just a really, really high quality, well done show with a black female lead that has nothing to do with her being black.
And I absolutely support that. I like that, you know, her blackness is there, but it's got, right. doesn't drive the character.
It does not.
It
informs the character, because they do mention it, especially when they talk about history and law and stuff like that. But, that's not
as
the
it
point
would,
of it.
As it
yes,
would.
As it should, as talking a, about those things.
If it's a very realist, if it's an attempt at a realistic depiction,
right.
someone who's black wouldn't be talking about going back in time and not have to discuss about the differences. You know what I mean? Like, that would be stupid. That'd be insane. It's a good show. I don't want to say, you like it quite a bit more than I do.
Yeah.
For me, it's like Vampire Diaries. I don't love that, but I watch it and I get it and it's good. And you like that quite a bit more than I do.
Yeah.
But I like this a bit. It's good.
Yeah.
You know, and we don't have to talk about it, but I was going to talk about that stupid Audi commercial. Okay, you never saw it. Did you see it?
No, I didn't.
It just was so, because you hate Audi.
They're idiots.
So the commercial is like a kid that's going to jump in a pool after eating, right? Like within an hour.
Don't swim.
And he does this whole like hypothetical, like, you know, the SWAT team comes in and be like frogmen with like flippers are jumping in to save him. And it's like, and like from there he goes to jail and it's like pool boy, like all this like stupid stuff happens. And he ends up jumping in anyway, and the guy whistles at him. And then as an adult, pool boy, like, you know, is driving an Audi. Literally, it's all, there's no words, there's no speaking. It's all this like conceptual shit happening. And then it's got a little text that kind of like plays across the screen. The world is full of rules. Be the exception.
Oh, Lord.
That's why you hate Audis.
The world is full of rules. Be an asshole.
That's why you hate really Audi means. Drivers.
They're the worst. Honestly.
Every time I see
somebody driving like an asshole, they're always in a goddamn Audi.
I'm begging. I hope.
Don't buy Audis.
No. I'm going to take it a step further. If there's somebody listening, I would really fucking love, I would absolutely amplify, lift up, and support not all Audis.
I really,
if you're an Audi driver,
I refer
fuck
to them
the convention.
As Audiots, as you know.
If you're an Audiot.
So not all Audiots, is that what
hashtag
you want to
say? Not all Audi. Not all Audiots.
Mm-hmm. Not all Audiots are idiots. I doubt that.
No, not just all Audis. Not all Audi drivers.
Mm.
Hit me up. One of you, please.
Nope. Not going to happen. So quick podcast standing shout out to Rashani, who is the host of the Single Simulcast. I was actually on it this week with the lovely Shirley and Chloe from the Chonilla podcast. Uh-huh. We chopped it up for a couple of hours. The episode is called Glass Before Ass, and I will let you listen to it to know why it's called that. Clove has some issues, but okay. And it's a great show. We talked about a bunch of stuff, and the show itself is great. He puts a lot of really awesome music in the mix, and so there's some DJing, and we chopped it up about a bunch of stuff. That woman pleasuring herself during a 50 Shades of Grey movie. We talk about Daily Burn. We talked about Manny Pacquiao, the king of the Philippines. We talked about shaming your kid with bad spelling and more. And of course, we extensively talked about Patricia Arquette's comments after the Oscars and white feminism. So I spent a good time ranting on that show. And then I spent almost the entire show on the Peniman Doctrine ranting about that as well. Hence my not wanting to talk too much about it here.
Okay.
So yeah, but you can find that at singlesimulcast.com. They're also, of course, on iTunes, Stitcher. Just search Single Simulcast, and you can follow Rashani at RASHANII, Rashani at Rashani, and also at Single Simulcast. So what's up? That's it.
Yeah, and I know we've gone long. I know that you're going to disagree with me, but like,
we're in the pipe. Five by five.
The sound, yo, we got it dialed in. I do it for you. On my marriage, I'm not going to say it was a hardship, but Leslie was fucking just, she doesn't hear it. Like, here the thing is,
over it, man.
I'm deaf. I'm literally deaf. I don't hear it for shit. But the thing is, and my mom has the same issue. It's a different kind of deafness, and it's like a donut hole. Mm-hmm. So I'm missing the middle range, which is voices and people talking, but I hear the high and the low end very fine. And so I've been with the audio, been tweaking it for you Johnners, trying to make it a little bit better. There's a hiss, trying to get a little bit less of that.
Right.
And right now, just listen, listen.
Yeah, okay.
It's nothing.
That's great.
It's nothing, man.
Yeah.
And there was that, like, sound like it was in a tunnel, like that weird, like, echo reverb. Mm-hmm. We dialed it in, man. 5x5.
Anyways. Again, we would appreciate feedback on iTunes or Stitcher. We will read any 5-star reviews on air. Shout out to the Black O Tips, Rod and Karen, for that policy. And you can find us again, iTunes, Stitcher. Just search Interracial John. That's JAWN. Or you can go to our website, interracialjohn.com.
It doesn't cost you anything. We're not asking for money. We're asking for a 5-star review. Don't make me beg. You know I'll get very white on you.
Don't make me go very white. You can follow me on Twitter at Leslie Mac MAC, and you can follow this idiot over here.
Your cohort.
At a very a white a guy.
I guess that's it.
I guess that is it.
Good night, everybody.
High five.